Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2016. Lecture 13, delivered on February 24, 2016. The title of this lecture is Bond Price Dynamics.
Today, Bond Price Dynamics. This is essentially a compact summary, at least in some regards, as to what I've talked about before. And I'm just going through some of it again just to make sure that you all have the basics down. I'm going to cover a little bit of new terminology and then simply talk about, not even necessarily showing you with the financial calculator, but just talking through the logic of how the dynamics of a bond's price flow. First and foremost, remember again that bonds are debt securities. A bond certificate represents an obligation by the issuer, a corporation or a government entity, to provide a certain amount of money in a timely fashion in the future. Now, that could be a single amount of money down the road. That would be what we call a zero coupon bond. Or it could be a cash flow that includes service on interest, and then at the end, one last interest payment, and then you get your money, your face value back. So in other words, $1,000 is borrowed, or something around $1,000. You are the Mr. Corporate, and you borrowed $1,000. I was the lender. This was the primary market transaction. We have the covenants of our bond indenture agreement, in which there are many things. One of them is how much you're going to pay me in interest and how long you're going to pay that before you give me my principal amount back, the face value. So we could say that you have just issued a 2046 8% bond. Now, then what we have is, for the next 30 years, I will give you 8% of $1,000, 8% of the face value of $1,000 every year. And then at the end, and in 2046, you will pay me $80 more, and then the $1,000, and it'll be gone forever, dead. Now, remember that actually in practice, most bonds coupons are not annual. And I've seen, interestingly enough, I did find a bond screener who was saying, well, what kind of bond do you want to look at? And I found annual. You could choose some annual, and there weren't a whole lot of those. Semi-annual, there was a whole list of bonds that I could look at that were semi-annual coupon. In other words, the $80 would be in two $40 payments per year. Then they had quarterly, and they had monthly. So there are bonds out there that would pay that $80 in 12 installments throughout the year. Not sure how, I honestly don't know how many of those animals are out there, but they are out there. Now, let me go into something about rating of bonds, just briefly. Three big services, Moody's, Fitch, and Standard & Poor's, rate the quality of bonds. Now, each of them has a somewhat different rating system. Big A, big A, big A, or little A, little A, little A, or something like that, you'll see that they have slightly different ratings. However, all of them, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm pretty sure of this, they all of them have the top four ratings are considered investment grade. Below that, they are considered not investment grade, speculative, to use a harsh word, junk bond. Let's not call them junk bonds. We'll call them speculative bonds. Based upon the rating service's assessment of the ability of the issuer to repay all of the coupon payments and the final amount, the face value back. So in other words, you could invest in, you could literally find bonds that they're going to pay you $1,000, the promise is $1,000 in, let's say, 20 years, but it's not really guaranteed that you're going to see it. It's not a high-powered, good, credit-worthy corporation, so that would be a speculative investment. As such, the bond price would tend to be considerably below par. Other bonds that are already out there trading in the secondary market, and remember, you don't have to be the lender and then hold the bond forever. You can just, until the maturity, you can unload it, sell it to someone else. But one way or the other, you will find that some bonds start out, near par, high quality. But as time went on, the company's fortunes were not so great, started slipping, and there you go. You're stuck with an investment that might not repay all of its promised payments and the amount at the end. If you were to look at the bonds of companies like, for example, Sears or JCPenney, those probably were issued at a high grade, but over the years they've had problems, and now those bonds have lower credit ratings, and their prices are commensurately lower because they have become more speculative. The yield to maturity is higher, gets higher and higher. Of course, the coupon is fixed, and so you have some problems out there. The bond market sellers outnumber buyers, and the bond price tails down until you've got speculative buyers are the only ones buying it. Corporate bonds have the covenants. Those covenants cover the maturity date, when in the future the lender will be paid back. By the way, the term of a bond is how much time it has left until maturity. Okay, so you have your maturity. It's going to be in the covenants. The coupon rate is going to be in the covenants. There will be covenants, as I had mentioned before, simply stating, all right, we, the lenders, are going to watch you. We have a representative appointed, a trustee, who will oversee those parts of your corporate operations that could impact on your ability to pay us back. And so that trustee is going to have some say in corporate activities. So in other words, if you're hanging out there with $1,000 to me, I'm going to appoint this evil man, Dr. No, to watch you, to make sure that you don't do some highly speculative investment that could crash your corporation and make it so I couldn't get my money back. Okay? Other covenants. Now, there's your normal, typical bond. 8%. Okay, I lent you 8%. I lent you money at 8%. I gave you $1,000. You agreed to pay me $80 back every year for the term of the bond, for the life of the bond. But there are some bonds that have other provisions that can be adverse to the lender. Now, I, as a lender, might be willing to take those on, those adverse conditions, but I would exact some things from you. One is that I would probably exact from you a higher coupon. Let's say that you want to be able to pay me back, not in 30 years, but maybe you'd like the option to pay me back in 5 years. Let's say interest rates fall. Well, I'm happy. I'm getting 8% and interest rates on risk-adjusted investments are falling. I'm loving it. I've got 8%. And then you pull out this call provision. It's called a call provision. And you say, here's your $1,000 back, Sparky. Don't call me Sparky. I'll have my trustee smack you for that. Okay. So here we go. I'm stuck. I got my money back. Now I can invest it only at 6%, which means that I have been burned by this and you have benefited. Now I'm willing to have you put that in the covenants when we do the original deal, but I'm going to say, all right, for that, I am going to expect you to pay me a higher coupon. And you say, no, So I'm going to lend you much less than $1,000 because basically you suck. Okay? You've done something to me. One way or the other, I am going to exact a premium for that call provision. Now, there are other things that can happen, too, when you're dealing with bonds. There's a convertibility clause that could happen. It's a nasty one. You are in serious trouble. You're not going to be able to make my coupon payment. Now, do you remember what I said happens if you don't make my coupon payment? What happens to you if you are the borrower and I'm expecting my $80 and you don't give it to me? What happens? Do you remember what bondholders can do? What I told you very early in the course a bondholder can do that no stockholder can do. Stockholders can do nothing but bitch at you if you don't give them a dividend. But if you don't pay me my coupon, I have the prior claim on the assets of the corporation. So what can I do to you? Do you remember what I said? You don't. I think I quoted it. I will shoot your dog, sell your Bible on Craigslist, and make your mother wear furry costumes that please me. And I mentioned Mrs. Fox starter kit. You see, if you don't pay me, I will put you into receivership. I will end you right there. Unless you have a provision in the covenants of the bond agreement called convertibility. Convertibility means that in a pinch, and it wouldn't happen, you wouldn't be able to do it right away. It would have to be something that would be triggered long down the road, maybe. You could turn my debt into equity. In other words, you could convert me from a debt holder with prior claim to nothing but a rank, pathetic, low-life shareholder. And I would not be happy because if your company's in so much trouble it can't pay its bondholders, that stock is probably worth somewhere between diddly and squat. Call it diddly squat. Okay? That's a convertibility. Now, I'm willing to even have that in there. I'm a lender. I'll say, okay, fine. But you are better well be sure I'm going to charge you a high coupon. I'm going to want you to provide me with a high coupon because of that convertibility clause. The convertibility premium is going to make me want something real nice in terms of candy. Or if you say, no, I'm still going to pay you 8%, then what I'm going to say is, no. Okay, fine. You want to pay me 8%? I'm going to lend you a whole lot less than $1,000, but you still have to pay me $1,000 back at the end. Okay? So, yeah, we can have these clauses in there that are adverse to the bondholders, to the lenders. But at the same time, there will be a price to pay for that on the corporation's side. Either they'll have to offer a higher coupon rate, or they will have to face the fact that I'm going to lend them a whole lot less than the face value, and I'm still going to want my $1,000 back at the end. So there's your straight-up bonds, there's your callable bonds, and then there are your convertible bonds. There are other animals out there, too. There are actually more than a few little twists and turns. But let me turn to something else, something a little less. There's still risk. We're still in this topic of risk to the lender. Okay, now you want to lend me, you want to borrow from me $1,000. Well, I could say, okay, we'll sign this bond agreement, and I'll get my $80 every year for the next 30 years, and I'll get one last $80 payment, and I'll get my $1,000 back. That's cool. But suppose I said, I don't feel comfortable doing this. I would really like to have something collateralize this debt. Hence, some bonds have an annex called a mortgage. In other words, there's an asset attached so that if you do go tap city, I walk and say, oh, see that building right there? Or see that fleet of trucks? That's mine. Liquidate it and pay me back first. Mortgage bonds are the safest. If a bond is not collateralized, it's called a debenture. A debenture. Got that one down? Not bad. You know, if it's a large creditworthy corporation, and there's not a whole lot of fear that it's going to die, there's no fear that it's going to die. Realistically, there's not going to be much spread between coupon and on a mortgage bond and coupon on a debenture. There'll be a spread. But if you've got a company that's a little on the shaky side, those mortgage bonds are going to be a lot safer investment than those ones that have no collateral behind them. There's another thing that can go on too. Let's try this. I want to pick on someone else here. Okay. I know this comes as kind of a surprise to you, but you're my first. I know, right? Don't question me. I'm not lying. You are the very first person that I've borrowed money from. You can sit back now. Okay, now, let's say that I run Whitfield Transit Facilities, trading symbol WTF. Okay? Now, you lend me money. You are the senior obligation. You are first in line. If things go bad and everything gets liquidated, your butt is covered first on the debt. You're second. I borrow $1,000 from you. You are subordinated to him. So you would maybe have senior subordinated. So in liquidation, he's covered first, and whatever's left goes to you. Then we could have later junior. You lend me money long, well past that. Yours is junior. So they would be covered first in liquidation, and then you would be. Down the road, you lend me money. You're junior subordinated. So first him, then him, and then you, if there's anything left at all. In that order. So you can have the senior subordinated, junior subordinated. There are all these tiers. Now, every one of the tiers will have a risk level. The higher up on the food chain you are, the lower the risk. So that would mean the lower the coupon rate. The higher the risk, the higher the coupon rate would be. And that gets kind of nasty if the company begins to get into trouble, because what will happen is that there will be sort of a calculation in the investment community's mind. Okay, this company is at serious risk of dying now. Okay, we know that the senior bonds are probably going to be covered. They're good. So the yield to maturity on those will go up, but it won't go up seriously. Well, it looks like as far as their asset base is concerned, there's going to be probably enough for you. So your coupon is going, the yield to maturity on yours will go up more than it would on his, but not horribly. But by the time we get to your sorry ass, you got nothing but wind whistling through your wallet. And you're dead. You're gone. Well, maybe there'll be enough for you to have a cheeseburger at Culver's or something like that. But that's it. Game over for you. So your yield to maturity would skyrocket, because the price of your bond would go down to almost nothing in that. Okay? So you have to watch out. When you invest in bonds, look at what the... obviously, you want to look at the rating services. Again, Fitch, Standard & Poor's, Moody's, see what their credit rating is. And keep an eye on whether or not it changes from time to time. The second thing that you also want to look at is, of course, is this a callable or a convertible bond? Those are a more speculative investment right there. Probably that will be reflected in the ratings, but going down deeper from the ratings, you'll see, this is why. It's a callable bond. Going down from there, you start asking yourself, what is the quality of this company? Now, obviously, the rating services are going to give you some great answers and clues and all that. But I would also look at the market itself. What is the market saying? I would also invite you to use your own common sense. I'm teaching you enough in here that you can begin to peel open those 10Ks and 10Qs and begin to think about walking around and having listening to the rumors on the street. If you have a chance and it's a retail company, go in there and walk around the stores and look for yourself to see what the quality of the investment is. This goes for stock and bonds both. At the end of the day, every bond will be at one of two prices on the date of maturity. It will either be at a price of $1,000 or it will be at a price of zero. No matter how much of a discount to par the bond was selling at in its life, at the end, it will either come up to $1,000 because you're going to get $1,000 on the maturity date, or it's going to be at zero because you'll get nothing. Well, there could be something left over. I should point that out. If there's a liquidation, you might get something. But in kind of a purist sort of way, it's going to be either $1,000 or zero. Now, let's take the $1,000. Let's say that it's a quality. You've made it the whole 30 years. And it's the day before the date of maturity. The term of the bond is now zero. Okay, in a day you're going to pay me $1,000. Great, end of it. Obviously the bond's going to trade for $1,000. Now through the bond's life, it could have been selling at a premium to par or at a discount to par. But as the date of maturity comes to us, doesn't matter where it's been, the price dynamic will be flowing toward $1,000 because on the payment, on the day that it matures, it's going to be $1,000 I want to get in my pocket. So 2 minutes before someone buys that bond, they're going to buy it for $1,000 because in 2 minutes they're going to get $1,000. Now there's another thing about bond price dynamics, and it's also actually also true of stock price dynamics too. I'm hopeful that you know, and you've seen in all the screens that I've shown you, that prices of securities are volatile. They go up and down and up and down, whipsaw, down, up. A lot of that is market noise. Some of it is diversifiable. You're not going to get any reward at all. You shouldn't expect a reward for the diversifiable, non-systematic risk. Some of that volatility, you'll get some reward for. The part of it that you cannot get rid of by putting the security in a well-diversified portfolio. So, here we go. That noise actually has messages underneath it. A lot of it is just random up and down, up and down. On some day, some stock market guru says something and the markets have a fit. Or on another day, there's some great news and the stock market goes up and this stock follows it up. You've got that in there. But there's pattern in the noise other than that. And I'll start this with stock. If you own stock and it pays a dividend, the board of directors is going to have a meeting where they will declare the dividend. And at that meeting, they will declare that shareholders of a specific date of record will get the dividend. So in other words, the company will pay a dividend of $1 a share on December the 31st for shareholders of record on December the 7th. So in other words, if you are an owner of the stock on December the 7th, you'll get a $1 per share dividend on the 31st. You buy it after that, you buy it before that, you get the dividend. The same is true with bondholders. Now in the secondary market, there's buying and selling bonds all the time. So I lend him money, but I'm tired of holding that bond. I've got other things to do with it because, I mean, right now Denny's has their Grand Slams on sale and all that, and I kind of like that. So I sell the bond to you, okay? Now there's a coupon coming up, an $80 coupon. If you owned it, the bond, if you had bought it and you were the bond holder of record on the date on a specific date, you would get the $80 coupon. So what happens with bonds is that underneath all the other noise, there's this pattern. As the date of record for the coupon payment comes closer, the bond price will start to slip up to reflect that coupon that's going to come. And then right after the date of record for payment of a coupon, it'll come back down again. It's a rhythmic pattern. But the problem is there's so much noise, especially in stock. But when you look at bonds, you can definitely see it a lot better. That there's this, as the date of record for a coupon approaches, the bond price will slip upward to reflect there's a coupon coming. And if you own the stock, well, you'll get that coupon. So obviously there will be increased demand for the bond, and that will push the price up to reflect that coupon that will be some extra candy. Right after the date of record for payment of a coupon, it'll drop back down, because if you own the bond after, if you get the bond after that date, you don't get that candy. So you'll see that rhythmic pattern in bond prices. You also see it in stock prices, but it's a lot harder to notice it because there's so much, like I said. Remember, bond prices are not nearly as volatile as stock prices. Stock prices, I mean, there are signals in there. There are messages all over in there, but they're just all kind of confused together. Okay, I've gone through those parts of the story. The bond price dynamics, again, as I just mentioned, and I've said this before, bond prices don't whipsaw around nearly as much as stock prices do. Bond prices are not even reported. It's almost impossible to find a place that gives you a really nice list of bond prices and yields to maturity these days. You don't hear a lot on the Financial News Network or any of those other news networks about bonds. Even though the bond market is 10 times the size of the stock market, you don't hear a whole lot about it. Now, here's the thing about that. That doesn't mean that you can't invest in bonds and invest for price appreciation. It will be a slower process, and it will be a lower risk process. So in other words, you're not going to hear so much about bond prices from the talking heads, because they're going to want to talk about the sexy things, the stock. Well, this stock gained 15% yesterday, and that was after a 20% drop 2 days ago, and we've got news coming out in the 10-Ks that will be released that might be adverse to the company, and we would see a real high degree of volatility as that 10-K report is approaching. Stock prices have that sexiness that gives the talking heads something to talk about. Bond prices don't move wildly. Talking heads are not going to, well, it looks like that yield to maturity gained 2 basis points yesterday. Boy, that was really a heart stopper there. No, they're not going to talk about something like that. However, that doesn't mean that you can't buy a bond for the purpose of investment for gain. A lot of people buy them just so they can get that fixed income payment, and then at the end they get their money back, what they lent. But there you can still buy bonds and essentially betting that the bond price will go up. You can short bonds, I guess, and on a bet that the bond price will go down. So, for example, let's take a company like Sears. You look like you buy your clothes at Sears. I'm sorry. I should not have said that. That was hurtful. So maybe you're a fan of Sears. You believe that Sears will pull it out of the fire, and it will look it will start doing better, and those bonds will pay off just fine. This company will be put itself back together. Everything will be cool. I mean, partly because you buy all your stuff there. I mean, that's got to help the stock price, or not. The thing though is that you might be a bond buyer, because the bonds are at a significant discount to par right now. So if you bought it, you would get the coupons as long as it was able to keep paying the coupons. Plus, if the bond actually did recover its price, you'd be able to unload it, maybe realize a little bit of a gain on it down the road. You know, hold it for 5 years, get the coupons, and then unload it. After 5 years, maybe the price has gone up from, let's say, the quote was 90, and maybe it's gone up to 97. great. See, you could actually invest that way. Again, though, these are lower risk. They're speculative. You can be very speculative if you go into less than investment grade bonds. But even within the realm of investment grade bonds, you can buy them for the purpose of betting on the prices of them over time. Now, down to the next core issue here. First thing, you make sure that you have this in your notes. And again, this is kind of a purist statement, that all bonds, regardless of whether they are selling at a discount to par or is at a premium to par, as the term approaches zero, the bond price will reach either par or zero. If it's selling at a premium to par, it will dive down on $1,000 as the term approaches zero. If it's selling at a discount to par and it's going to pay off, it will rise up toward that $1,000 on either side. Make sure you know how to answer this question if I hit you with this on the first exam. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Don't try to answer it on one side. They'll all do one of two things. Whether they're at a premium or a discount to par, they will all dive down or up on par or zero. And again, that's a pure statement because, I mean, technically, if the bond goes into default, the senior bondholders are going to get some or all of their money back. Okay, so now, I'm going to hit you with a question and see if I can, and this is rather going to be a difficult question. That's why I do this, so that you're not blindsided by it if I ask it on an exam. Everyone's kind of looking, oh God, he's going to ask this of me. Madam, what is the relationship between the price and the spread between coupon and yield? I know, right? It's such a cool question. If once you know the answer to it, you can show your mom. Look at the kinds of questions. I can answer these. The coupon and the yield. Let's say that there is a giant spread between them. Tell me how that's going to affect the price of the bond relative to par. That's okay. Let me frame it a different way. Let's say that the coupon is 8% and the yield is 8%. Can you tell me that's the no-brainer? If the yield is 8% and the coupon is 8%, you know the price of the bond is what? Bingo! You're actually much, much more intelligent than I was giving you credit for. That's exactly right. Perfect. Now, suppose that the yield is above the coupon. The bond would sell at bingo. Now, one last time. For the $64,000, if the yield is below the coupon, the bond will sell at to par. So, let me try it on you. What is the relationship between the coupon, the price of a bond, and the spread between coupon and yield? Again, what is the relationship between the price of a bond and the spread between coupon and yield?
If the spread increases, so does the
question. You're really close. You're really close. Now, I didn't tell you which way the spread was, but the spread, as the spread increases between coupon and yield, what happens to the price of the bond? I'll even start you out. Bingo! Oh. I'm impressed. Can we write that down? Now, you see, as the spread between coupon and yield increases, the bond moves further from par. Now, because I didn't tell you which way the spread was, positive or negative, you don't know which way it's moving away from par, but it is, just as you said, moving away from par. Now, that effect is larger the longer the term of the bond, because there's more time for that spread to have its effect. As you approach maturity, though, the spread will not matter as much. Do you follow that? Let me ask this. Do you follow that? When there's a long term, in other words, this bond has a lot of years left in it, a spread between coupon and yield will have a much stronger effect on price than it would if the term were very close to zero. In other words, if I've got a yield to maturity is 9% and the coupon is 8%, and I've got 20 years left on the bond, that's a lot of time for that spread to hurt, okay? But if there is only, let's say, a year left, that spread, as significant as it is, won't have that much time before you get your $1,000 back. Do you follow the idea there? You're looking at me. Let it sink in a little bit. Okay, now let me try do one more thing. You have lent me, you, sir, have lent me $100 million. I'll pay you back in 30 years. Are you happy with, comfortable with that? I'm a large credit-worthy corporation. You see, one thing in the covenants of the bond agreement that I haven't mentioned yet is that almost always, well, always, there will be some way for the lenders to ensure that I, the corporate borrower, am squirreling away the money so that in 30 years I can pay you back the face value of the debt. In other words, you're going to have something in there that says put such and such money away every year, or in some other way you're going to have enough money set aside so that you can repay the face value. The classic way is through what's called a sinking fund. A sinking fund. The way it would work, and this is just a kind of an idealized trick. The way it works is this. For the first maybe 10 years, let's say it's $100 million, I have to pay him back. For the first, let's say, maybe 10 years, I'm going to put into a trust account, let's say $5 million for the first 10 years, $7 million. So that front-loaded, I've got a lot of money going in there, and I can't touch it as the borrower. It's going to go to him in 30 years. And then by the time we get to, say, 20 years, I have put enough in there so that I've got him covered at the end completely. The borrower is not going to get by with just riding 30 years out and then hoping to God he has $100 million to hand over. There's another trick. There's another way that it can be done too. Let's say that you want to borrow from me, $10 million. Term 30 years. I, as a lender, might say, all right, tell you what we're going to do. I'll do a deal with you where I will lend you $2 million a year for the next 5 years. So that in 30 years, you owe me $2 million. In 31 years, you owe me $2 million. 32 years, you owe me Do you follow the pattern there? This is like a sinking fund. Essentially, we call these serial bonds. And I'm not talking like Apple Jacks. I'm talking about serial, S-E-R-I-A-L. Okay? Serial bonds. They're actually kind of a cool little twist. There are other kinds of tricks that can be done too, but serial bonds you'll see out there for some new issues. And essentially it's a way so that in any given year, the impact, let's say I'm the one who's, you're the one who's paying me, the impact on you would not be $10 million in 30 years. It would be $2 million. There'd probably still be some kind of a sinking fund agreement in there, but the impact on you as the corporate borrower would not be as hard as if that sinking fund were set up for $10 million all at once. Serial bonds are out there all over the place, and there are all kinds of variations and versions on them. You take one of my later courses, you'll see some neat tricks on the serial bond and how you can create kind of like the treasury. I shouldn't get into that. Never mind. Okay, so there is your serial bonds. Another way of providing for the lender to make sure that the lender is paid back on the due date. Bonds used to be a little different from how they are now. I think there's a picture in the book. I honestly don't know that there are any of these out there. In the old days, back in the day, you would borrow, let's say, $100 million. You're a corporate borrower, okay? What you would do, I lend you, let's say, $100 million. Well, let's say it's $100 million on a 5% coupon. That means that every year you have to pay me $5 million. Back in the day, you would actually give me a big certificate, and on one side were all of these, looked like stamps. You tear them off. Now, what I would do is I would tear off that stamp and I would send it to you, and that told you that I was the one who got the check. And I said, please send it to this person right here. That's called a bearer bond. A bearer bond. B-E-A-R-E-R. Bearer bond. So in other words, if I sold the bond to you, I didn't really finish selling it until I gave you that coupon book. And then you could tear off the coupon, the next one, and send it. Oh, I see you've got it. Your name is in. And write the check to you and send it to you. A bearer bond. You see how these were an extraordinarily nice instrument as far as efficiency for buying and selling in sort of a, in a way. But they were also a very interesting way for, shall we say, shady criminal elements to do their work, you see, because with a bearer bond, see, what I could do is instead of paying you cash, I could pay you a bearer bond, and then you could just tear off the coupons and send them in. He didn't know you from Adam's left ox. All he knew was that you had the coupon that came off and you get the money. They were very popular for a lot of things, and I don't think they're around too much anymore, but there you go. These days, they're all electronically traded and all of that. Last part of this. I've gone through the rating services. Fitch, Moody's, Standard & Poor's, they all give ratings. None of them are perfect. And I need to qualify that. Don't get the idea that these rating services are going to tell you the absolute fact of the matter about what to invest in and what not to invest in. There was a scandal back in the around the time of the crash of the markets in 2008, because essentially these rating services, and I won't mention the one that I'm thinking of right off the top of my head, Standard & Poor's, essentially were giving high ratings to debt instruments that absolutely sucked. Standard & Poor's was just rubber stamping stuff. Now, quite honestly, back in my time in the business, I saw an awful lot of what I consider to be questionable practices. When I tried to get clients rated by the rating services, one of them, back in that time, let me know that the higher the fee that I paid for services, the more favorable my client was going to be viewed in terms of credit ratings and all that. Interestingly enough, this one credit rating service that I just did not mention a little bit ago was so scandalous in its high credit ratings for junk debt that the government actually, for once in its life, cracked down and paddled the rating service, spanked it. So what did the rating service do? Did it act contrite? Did it apologize and say, we have gone from top to bottom reforming our company and we are going to spearhead reform in the industry? No, you know what that rating service did? It downgraded the rating on government debt instruments. It downgraded the rating. Smack me across the ass, I'll smack you across the ass harder. Can you imagine that? The sheer guts that you have been told you were wrong, the markets nearly died, and we had an apocalypse of zombie proportions, and they weren't going to take their spanking lying down. They downgraded the rating of government debt. Now remember I told you, government debt is as safe as you are ever going to get, simply because the government will pay you off. The government will borrow more money so that it can pay you. If it doesn't do that, well, then it can raise taxes. Well, anymore, that's like a death sentence to a politician, I guess. If it doesn't do that, we can just attack another country and declare that its assets belong to us. You will get your money back from the government. Now, I do want to bring up one quick thing about government issues. Remember that there are those discount bonds, those zero coupon 1-year treasury bills. You got all kinds of animals out there of notes, bonds. You also have other kinds of government debt too. You have something called agency debt, where there are these sort of like semi-autonomous entities that are part of the government in a way. They were enabled by federal legislation, but they can issue their own debt. Well, the one that probably you might recognize the name is Tennessee Valley Authority, TVA. Agency debt. Interestingly enough, when we look at when they report the federal deficit or the national debt, you want to make sure that if you're looking at some number like the national debt, make sure that you're looking at that the number you're looking at includes agency debt. Oftentimes it doesn't. And that can be a rather significant thing. It's gone up a lot, and then it started to go back down again. But it's out there, and you can invest in agency. Now, other kinds of sovereign debt. You can invest in what are called munis, municipal securities, munis. Munis are issued by state and local entities. A muni might be something like, well, this school district wants to build a new high school. So they will issue a debt. First, they get the approval of voters to do it. And then if they get the approval of the voters, they will then have the authority to issue a bond, which will be bought by certain types of investors. And then they can, then essentially there's some provision how the investors will be paid back. If it's a revenue bond, it might be through an increase on property taxes, something like that. Cities can issue municipals, munis, for the purpose of, say, upgrading the sewerage system or the water system or building and doing something with the roads. These have an upside and a downside for investors. The upside is that they are not taxable, your payments are not taxable at the federal level. They are for very high tax bracket investors. Because essentially, I mean, if you get a shield from taxes and you don't pay taxes, you're so poor you don't pay taxes, it means nothing to you. Munis tend to pay a low coupon simply because of that non-taxability trick in them. The downside in recent history has been that some munis have actually defaulted. A famous spectacular case, I think it was before your time, was a muni in a Cleveland muni defaulted. Can you think of any munis that have defaulted in your in recent years or days? Yo, yeah, and others are teetering. So they are kind of speculative, some of them are. What has made the problem more significant? I don't know if I've mentioned this or not. You see, one of the buyers of munis, one of the general lenders to school districts, to cities, and all that, were banks. Yeah, they're safe investments, buy a bunch of those, and they counted as essentially your top quality capital in the bank's reserves. Well, we own $50 million worth of school bonds from around this area. And they count it as very safe capital, which we like to have banks have safe capital. The Federal Reserve late last year announced banks could no longer count munis in their super safe capital. Which, of course, essentially, the banks suddenly said, FTS, we're not going to touch those things. Why would we, if we're not going to have that count toward our safe capital? Essentially, one of the largest, most powerful sources of funding for school districts, for water, sewerage, roads, bridges, you name it, gone. Interestingly enough, in part, it would be argued, okay, yeah, we did have some nasty, we've got some nasty defaults, and that could impact rather seriously on a bank's reserves or bank's capital if it had lent money to a city and the city went tap city on its debt. But at the same time, where is the money going to come from now that the biggest lender is gone from the equation? Hoping maybe very, very rich institutions, trust funds are going to fill in a gap that size, ain't going to happen. So there you go. There's a lot of concern and consternation now in the municipal market. Well, where are all these cities and school districts going to go for their lending in the wake of this decision by the Federal Reserve? We'll see. Now, let me go down to something called the Illinois premium. I begin this by telling you something you probably, well, maybe you know it. Every year, I must take this ethics exam required by the state of Illinois to prove that I know my ethics and I am ethical. I have to take an exam as a state employee. Now, let me repeat that. The state of Illinois requires this. The state's legislature and the governor says, I have to prove that I am ethical. Do you see any irony, by the way, of that? Good, good, good. I just want to make sure that just galls my ass every time I have to take that. But anyway, Illinois is one of the few states that has, and it's called the Illinois premium. Any debt issue from Illinois will have a bump in its coupon, has to pay a higher coupon, simply because Illinois is considered by the investment community to be at slightly higher risk than other states, simply because of the massive burden of debt that we wear and we have worn through years of irresponsibility, both through Democrat and Republican administrations, we have put ourselves in a situation where the markets see a slightly higher probability of default in Illinois than in other states. Now, you might be able to think of other states that would have an Illinois premium. A few do, interestingly enough, a few have started to show the Illinois premium. But Illinois is sort of like the archetype of the higher risk higher expected return, there you go, that famous first principle, in the market. We pay more for our debt here simply because we have gone so many years behaving irresponsibly with respect to these massive, staggering debts that there is a higher probability of default in this state than there is in other states. In practice, what that means is that the cost of capital for public entities in this state is higher than it is in other states. The burden then is higher for some entity that needs to borrow money to be able to repay that because the coupons are higher. So that's real money that they have to get from somewhere. And the only place that they can probably get that money is from the taxpayers in the taxing district. Now, there are other ways, by the way, let me bring this up, let me ask you. Is there any other way that a muni could pay its lenders? There are some entities that issue debt instruments, and they say, well, we don't tax. We have some other way that we have another mechanism to generate the revenue. Can you think of any other mechanism?
Just lowering the property taxes?
You wouldn't want to lower them. You would want to raise them. But now that's a tax. Is there anything else? Well, haven't you ever driven up to Chicago? What do you run into up in Chicago? Bingo. Good. Sometimes it'll be a toll. A toll? There have been famous stories of toll roads that were supposed to stop being toll roads once the bonds were repaid. And they said, oh, wait, that's pretty cool money. Now we don't have to pay anyone. We'll keep the money. And the toll roads stay. Tolls are one way. There are other mechanisms, too. There are sometimes you can have some kind of a fee that is assessed to the users of a service that is going to be financed with a muni. There are other things, too, that could happen. But property taxes are one very popular way to do it. There's a problem, though, with this way of financing your muni. School districts have faced this for years and years, and this is one place where there has to be some reform somewhere along the way. There has to be some reform. Because almost always, if you vote for a school levy, what you are voting for is an increase in your property taxes. Now, do you have any kids? I hope not. Not at your age. Goodness. Okay, so you're going to vote for a school levy for those snot-nosed kids and their parents who were too irresponsible not to crank out kids? Of course you're not. You have a disincentive to vote for that property tax increase. You are an old geezer. You're not that old, but yeah, you know. You'll be an old geezer. You've already paid for your kids. Why the hell should you have to pay for someone else's kid? I'll pay for that. You see, there is a disincentive to vote for school levies. And that's why many school levies have failed, and the buildings have gotten decrepit and filled up more and more with kids, and the school buses break down more and all that kind of stuff, because that is not a great idea for funding something like schools. So that's why you see in some states this struggle to try to stop funding schools by this traditional mechanism of property taxes that pay the coupons and the face value of debt that we borrow from from high-powered investors. That's why we keep trying to talk about some kind of state tax or something like that, or an increase in the state sales tax to try to get around this, because the investors, there are investors out there, although maybe not as many as there used to be, but trying to get to the point where we put people under an obligation that you don't want. You don't have any kids. You don't want because you've already had your kids. They've already grown up. And you're not going to support those schools because those schools are all kinds of weird these days. You know, you've heard about what goes on in those. Why would you pay? Why would you vote for the levy? So understand that that's kind of an interesting thing that's happening in the municipals market, the munis market right now. One last thing that I'll bring up. There are international debt instruments, too. International. You can actually When you buy a government debt security, you're lending our government, the United States government, money. That's what it is. It's very safe. I mean, the only risk premium is on the long stuff, which has the maturity premium. Default premium isn't there. Liquidity premium isn't there. So it's very safe. But you don't have to invest in our debt. You could invest in another country's debt. Suppose that you actually have you have Swedish parents. Your name is actually Sven, and you would like to support your own country's irresponsible debt habits. You can buy the lend money to your own country or to another country. So there are international bonds too that you might want to invest in. If you think the United States is going to hell in a handbasket, but you still want to invest in sovereign debt issues. There's another one. There's a whole variety of them out there, and the debt market is just alive. It's a huge market, and it's worth you looking at as an investor in the future. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.